Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360 degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's Klaviyo.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast, E-commerce Leaders, the marketing podcast for high growth direct consumer, e-commerce, and retail brands, where you learn what's working in e-commerce marketing with interviews from the fastest growing brands. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO at Wavebreak, a boutique email and CRM agency working with leading high growth brands. If you want to learn more about working with us, you can do so at wavebreak.com. That's WAVEBREAK.com. Today on the show, I'm joined by Kristen Olszewski. She is the founder and CEO of Nomadica. Nomadica is a high growth new canned wine brand, which I will let Kristen explain more about, but they're growing extremely fast. They've grown 4x last year and they just launched D2C and it's already 50% of their revenue. So we talk about raising money, influencer marketing as a wine brand, and everything in between. Lot to learn here and excited for this interview. So without further ado, let's jump right into it.
I'm so excited to be here and so impressed with your perfect pronunciation of my name.
Thank you. I have a lot of practice pronouncing names on the podcast. I definitely don't ask people how to pronounce their name. I just go for it. Okay, cool. Tell us, Nomadica, for people who don't know it, what is it? High level overview.
So I guess I'll get into a little about my backstory and then talk about Nomadica, because the two are inextricably intertwined. I'm a Harvard med school dropout turned sommelier, and I've spent the last decade working in some of the best restaurants in the country, everywhere from 3 Michelin star Saison to Sean Brock's Husk in Nashville. If anyone's ever seen Mind of a Chef, he was a really genius guy to work for. And then recently I was a sommelier at Nancy Silverton's Austria Mozza. So I could bore you to death with my knowledge of Barolo Cruz. And you know, in my 10 years of working in wine, what's always really gotten me excited and gotten me, you know, raring to go for the day was not selling those $2,000 unicorn bottles to the table of businessmen who could honestly care less what they're drinking, but selling that $40, $50, $60 bottle to the couple who they're splurging on a Michelin meal. They're intimidated to talk to a sommelier. They don't have a ton of experience with wine. They're overwhelmed, they're nervous, and they essentially think I'm just going to steal all their money and give them a terrible deal. But instead, turning them on to something approachable, opening their eyes to the world outside of Pinot Noir and Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay. There are so many grape varietals that are exciting and great values out there in the wine world. And so when I always knew I wanted to start my own company, because I wanted to give people that access, that in, that accessibility with wine, because Wine is so intimidating, so pretentious. You walk into a wine store, there's 4,000 different labels. It's incredibly difficult to navigate unless you have a lot of experience. And so when thinking about starting my own company, you know, my undergraduate degree is in sustainable agriculture. And I started doing a deep dive on essentially how bad glass is for the environment. So many reasons, you know, it's highly energy intensive to produce. It's not recyclable. The shipping emissions are crazy because it's so heavy. And really only like 1% of wine needs to age. Like I would never put a wine that needs to age in anything other than glass. But most wines, when you're drinking like fresh, young, vibrant wine, there's no need. It can't be in something totally different than glass. And so I decided to launch Nomadica as a premium modern wine company focused in sustainable alternative packaging. And right now we're focused on cans, but we do have some plans to innovate outside of cans in the next couple of years.
Oh, interesting. So like, okay, so if it's not glass and it's not a can, what is it?
It could be a keg. You know, it could be so many things. There's so many vessels for wine. And when you look at every other industry in BevAlc, they've all been so quick to innovate, so quick to change. And I think the biggest issue the wine industry is facing right now is the fact that millennials and Gen Z aren't drinking the amount of wine they used to drink. In 2016, millennials were almost half of the wine purchasers in the US. And right now that number is like 22%.
So basically what you're saying is since the launch of White Claw, wine sales have been down. And so putting wine in a skinny can is getting the sales back up.
It you know, and some other things, but
No, this is super interesting. Okay. So you launched this brand, obviously you have the wine background. And then like, what was, you know, before we get into like growing it, what was it like to like put that together? Like, did you already have relationships with all the, you know, vineyards or whatever? And you're like, hey, I want to put your wine in a can. I'm sure some people were like, oh, that's crazy. Or were they not? Like, what was that initial process like putting together like the initial product once you saw the opportunity?
So the product has always been the easiest thing about the business for me. You know, I've spent my life working in wine. I know wine incredibly well. I have so many relationships just from working in this space. And so I went to some pretty incredible players for our first launch. You know, I don't produce the wine myself. It truly is sommelier curated. I work with vintners who practice sustainable farming, no chemical manipulation. All of our wines are totally dry, so there's zero sugar. Essentially like to say we're better for you and better for the planet. And one of the things I did was go to this winemaker, Bob Lindquist, who is like OG California winemaker. He started a brand called Coupe. He was one of what we call the Rhone Rangers. There's a group of winemakers based in the Central Coast that are the reason why we grow varietals from Rhone Valley in France, in the Central Coast of California. Bob claims that he smuggled vines back in the 80s and planted them. So things like Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre, you know, we're used to those varietals being grown in the Central Coast, but it was really a small group of winemakers who saw that opportunity and made that happen. And so I went to Bob because he's known, respected, beloved. And I was like, Bob, let me put your wine in a can, like partner with me on this. And I thought he was going to tell me to like screw off and go away. But he was like, I love this. This is so cool. Let's do it. And we put his French Camp Vineyard Syrah in a can. And we also put his Yanago Valley Chardonnay in our sparkling, which is a historic vineyard in California. It's like one of the oldest vineyards. It was planted in the early 50s. And like launching a brand, especially in a space that's usually been not super focused on quality, and going with these prestige winemakers, like that was the easy part. The hard part was everything else.
Got it. Yeah. And so, okay. So you get the product, and then what's tricky about, you know, anything within Shaft. So, you know, alcohol, CBD, anything like that, you can't market it the same way because of, you know, different limitations and rules and regulations. And I mean, that's probably especially difficult as a really emerging brand, just getting this off the ground. Obviously you had your expertise on like the wine side, I don't know how much experience you had on the marketing side, but then like, yeah, how did you get those initial sales? And also, when did you launch the brand officially?
We came up with the idea in 2017, but we officially launched in 2018 and 2019 was like our first real year. For all intents and purposes. Yeah.
And then, so yeah, how'd you start selling the product in 2019? Like the first real year?
Well, so the first thing was getting investors, which.
And you did that pre-launch, but when you had the product?
No, I did that alongside developing the product. So that was really great just because, through, again, being a sommelier at some of the best restaurants in the country, you do have the opportunity to develop, you know, some pretty incredible personal relationships with some people with capital and who know you, who trust you. You've, you know, explored the regions of Tuscany together in a wine sense. So I was really lucky to have a lot of my regulars contribute to my friends and family round and really get me going. Also, a lot of them are entrepreneurs. So having that support, that guidance through the process of like, how do you start a business? How do I even think about advertising? One of those people connected me with this man who's been an advisor of mine since day one, John Potter, who now is managing director at Suntory Beam, but he was CMO at Boston Beer, CMO of Diageo North America, Moet Hennessy. He's been a huge asset in just navigating through that because compliance lawyers are very expensive. And when we were first starting out, I was really, you know, doing it on my own.
Yeah. And then that's interesting. Like, did you know much about like, so you raised friends and family. Have you raised since then or you have? Okay. So yeah, did you raise a seed round or?
Yeah, I raised a seed round and then a bridge to A.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, and like, did you know anything about like the venture capital world before that when you're on brand side? So how do you like, how do you figure that out as you're going? Like you're just talking to people and you're like, oh yeah, bridge sounds like a good idea right now. Or like, how did you even figure that out? Cause I always find that fascinating. Like, going from like, okay, you're really good at wine to now like running this high growth startup. Like there's so much to figure out, not even just compliance and marketing, but then also like, yeah, how are we going to fundraise and get money and actually grow this thing? Like, how did you figure that out?
I've always been the type of person that just figures it out. You know, I think the fact that my undergraduate degree was in sustainable agriculture and English, and then I decided I wanted to be a doctor. So I did a pre-med post-bac and then got into med school, like gave me a lot of confidence to know that no matter what it was, if I wanted to do it, I could figure out how to get there. I have always been very lucky in my life to find myself surrounded by people smarter than I am. And I think one of my greatest skills is knowing what I'm not good at and asking for help and then listening to people's advice when they have more experience than I have. So I think that doing that was just so helpful. Also, I will be totally honest. I lucked out in my seed round. Our lead investors, I've heard some horror stories out there. Our lead investors are incredible. It's a group called Lunch Partners based out of New York City. The two partners run a data-driven marketing agency called Known. And their CEO is my board member who has been just the biggest mentor and guide to me through this process. I mean, having people around you like that, that you can pick up the phone, text them, call them in the bad times and the good times is invaluable.
That makes sense. And then so you raise this initial money, you're building the product. Now you got to go sell it. Pressure's on. What's the thought process? Is it like, hey, let's go online initially? Or is it like, I have these relationships already with, you know, different, I don't know, vineyards or whatever, like we can throw this in their, I don't know, gift shop or what, how did you get the initial sales of the product?
So something I wish I'd done differently was plan on launching our D2C a lot sooner. It takes like almost a year to get all of your licenses in order for you to sell wine online. And so we launched our D2C in 2021. If I could turn back time, I would have launched that during the pandemic, obviously. But you know, back in those early days, because alcohol like is one of the most expensive businesses to be in possible. And, you know, starting out, you're severely undercapitalized. Like I can't compare to Moet Hennessy, to Constellation, to Gallo. And so I was really thinking, you know, where can I win? Where can I kind of weasel my way in that these big companies can't? And that was just all of my wine community and my relationships. And I wanted to do something different than everyone else in Cannes did. So everyone else in Cannes launched their brand in retail. I didn't do that. I looked at what spirit brands did really well, or what brands like Red Bull have done really well. And I went entirely on premise. So bars, hotels, restaurants. I wanted Nomadica to sit alongside other premium products. And when I wanted you to have your first experience with my brand, to have it poured into a wine glass in front of you with the can in your hand, and that person who's serving it to you knows my story, knows about what we're doing, can essentially be like a mini Kristen telling you all about how wonderful our wine is and why we're different than everyone else. And we were really lucky. We got some really incredible placements right away, places like the Hoxton Hotel, the Four Seasons, the Fairmont, a lot of chef-driven fast casual, some really fun bars.
And was that you just taking it into the store and being like, hey, check this out? Or
yeah. And that first, oh my God, how arrogant I was. I remember thinking, all I do is sell wine for a living. I'm going to crush the sales on this. It's going to be so easy. And we were really one of the first wine in cans out there. And so even my friends, you know, my sommelier friends who I've known for years was like, Kristen, this is such a bad idea. Good wine cannot come out of a can. Like, it just can't. It's impossible.
Like people you're trying to sell to get the placement. They're like, this is a terrible idea.
Yeah, no one will want this. You know, you're so wrong. And so I would sit down and make buyers taste with me out of wine glasses, the same way you would taste bottled wine. And the result was always like, wow, this is really good. I'm shocked. And like one of our first champions was, now he's the owner of a one Michelin star restaurant in Los Angeles called Cato, but Ryan Bailey, who at the time was the wine director at the Nomad Hotel. And he was like, I love your product. I'm going to bring you in. I'm going to support you. I'm going to put you in mini bars. I'm going to put you upstairs on the rooftop by the pool. And having a champion like that behind you, and then going to other places and being like, Ryan Bailey at Nomad is serving us. We're clearly, you know, not too bad.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. And then you go to Four Seasons and be like, hey, like, you know, we're a great upsell in the fridge.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then like, how did you, is that like the was that like the main channel then? And it's like, hey, let's hit the ground running with this. Are you still running that today? Or do you have like a team of sales reps? Or what does that look like?
We're still a really small team. I have some incredible sales reps. My Los Angeles sales rep like literally slid into my DMs a year ago and was like, I love what you're doing. I love your wine. She had no sales experience. And she has just been like the most incredible asset. It took like 2 months to train her and now she's just crushing. But yeah. I love selling. Like I think any founder, CEO knows like that's, you know, your three jobs are selling your product, fundraising and hiring. And I'm still involved, but I've taken a much more hands-on approach with our digital marketing and storytelling as well, as kind of I am the moat of our brand.
Yeah. And let's move there. So you finally get all the permits and licenses to launch online. Like, what does that process actually even entail? Like, do you have to go state by state? And like, how do you make sure, you know, even thinking like, you know, I think like if something like this launched previously, like anybody could just order you. There's the 21 plus requirement in the US. Like, how do you even deal with that? Like, do you just install software for that? Or like, is there, cause I imagine there's like there's probably a liability aspect to it too. Cause like anyone can just order anything in the mail, or how does that work? I've never ordered anything like this online.
It is really not fun. Whenever like a young founder comes to me and is like, I want to start an alcohol company. And I'm like, do not go, like, don't, unless you want to like raise millions of dollars right off the bat, like don't do
that. And work at this for like 50 years.
Exactly. But
good moat though. Like if you can get it right, like it's set. Like it's like
100%. And so I have a really great compliance lawyer. I adore her and will do anything for her. But she was really, really big in helping me set everything up. Of course, you know, there's a lot of add-ons to your Shopify site that you have to age gate. You have to ask people if they're 21, have them enter their birthday. There's certain things you have to do on the back end for compliance. And it literally is a state by state process. So like, you know, in Tennessee, you can't ship more than 2 cases of wine a year to the same person. And Yeah, but in California, like, you know, no man's land, do whatever you want. Just make sure they're 21. So
which is interesting because you feel like if anyone would have like an extra rule, like it would be California. I feel like especially for like consumer products brands, like, you know, I'm not in California, but like you get any product and it's like you have your California list of labels of like things that have to be disclosed. But wow, that's so interesting. I did not know that. Anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah. And then you have to, never mind that, you have to report your sales to each state every month. You have to file, you have to pay. It's like so labor intense. It's just insane. But, you know, that's why it takes a year to set up. And then once it's set up, it's a matter of maintaining it and just making sure you're in good standing. And you just have to be very careful.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so how are you driving traffic? How are you driving traffic to the site? You can't do the typical Facebook or, you know, normal go-to playbook plays like everybody else can. So how are you getting people to the site?
So we can do Instagram and Facebook. We cannot advertise on TikTok, which is a bummer. I wish we could. I am hoping that they change those laws in the next year, fingers crossed. But, you know, we started, and I kind of took a really different approach with digital brands because we're not an e-commerce store. You know, we're a digitally native brand. Like our shopper is omnichannel. I do. And thank God for our partners. And they see this the same way I do. Like I care, of course, about you know, clicking on the ad and purchasing from our store, but I care just as much about you knowing that we exist and the storytelling aspect of it. So that when you're in a Whole Foods or you're at SoFi Stadium and you see Nomadica, you're like, oh, wait, I know that. That's really great wine there. There's a unique, interesting value prop there. And I think, you know, the best thing is we're not doing any like education. Like people know what white wine is. People know what red wine is. But I think we're telling a really unique story. Like let me be your sommelier, your everyday sommelier that's picking out your wines for you. Let me give you a safe space to experiment within. Let me be your trusted guide. And also you can feel good about yourself, right? You're like lowering your carbon footprint and like drinking great wine at the same time.
Yeah. And it, are you trying to push people into like the subscription more, or is it more like the one-off shop, or what does that look like?
Subscription, of course.
Yeah.
I also love like engaging with our customers. And from day one, I always wanted to do these like limited edition drops, you know, and of course, like you can't set up a brand like that. Like you need to have, we have 5 core everyday SKUs that are available, right? 365 and all of our channels, 2 sparklings, a still white and a still rosé and a red. But I always wanted to do these like high end wine and can. And we didn't launch that until last year. And it was as an incentive for our subscription. So each quarter we do a limited edition drop. And these are super fun. Like we did a Piquette, which is it's a wine-based beverage technically, but it drinks like an orange wine. It's 8% alcohol. It's a natural wine. It's so cool. We did it in collaboration with one of my favorite winemakers, Root Down Cellars up in Sonoma. Our Q3 limited edition was a sparkling Barbera, sparkling red that kind of drank like a Lambrusco. You were supposed to put a chill on it. People went nuts for it. Our Q4 limited edition was an organic biodynamic Cabernet Sauvignon from the Sierra Nevada foothills that it drank kind of like an Italian red. It was so tannic and like rough around the edges, but velvety smooth on the inside. And these are higher end than our everyday SKUs. We only do 100 cases and we give our club members first access to these.
And now a quick break for a quick word from our sponsor, Okendo. Okendo is the new standard in customer reviews for high-growth Shopify brands. We use them with our clients, and they work with over 4,000 of the fastest-growing Shopify retailers like Skims, Nomad, and Buck Mason to help them leverage their most powerful asset, their customers. Okendo gives brands all the tools they need to capture and showcase customer-generated content like product reviews and ratings, photos and videos, and Q&A. Plus, they have an awesome integration with Klaviyo that makes it easy to do cool stuff like send review request emails and target shoppers based on review content. And now that it's that time of year again, when Black Friday and Cyber Monday are top of mind, Okendo is offering a 90-day free trial to help e-commerce brands ramp holiday conversion without having to worry about increased subscription costs. If you sign up before October 31st, you pay nothing until 2022. It's really a no-brainer to me, and don't worry, you won't be forced into any expensive annual contracts after your trial is up. They offer super affordable monthly subscriptions starting at $29. So you can make the most out of this holiday season with a little help from Okendo. Visit okendo.io and start your free trial today. That's okendo.io. Thanks, Okendo, for sponsoring the show. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And then, like, how does it work if you sign up for this subscription and you're based in Tennessee and you can only get two orders? Like, do you get cut off, or how does that work?
Yeah, you do.
And oh, that sucks.
Yeah, I know. Not all states are created the same. It's, I feel bad. Like Rhode Island, we can't even ship to Rhode Island. We can't ship to Maine. We can't ship to Alabama or Utah.
Hmm. It's such a weird thing. And what's weird is, like, I feel like it's better than it used to be. I remember, like, early versions of these types of companies, like, just like it being so weird. Like, you could, like, order like one place, or it was like the way people used to hack it together. I don't even remember how they used to do it, but like there was like workarounds to it. Like, it just wasn't, I mean, maybe things are better now, but, that's just so fascinating. But I love the drop idea too. I think that's really important for, especially for retention of subscription and like the exclusivity. And I like the angle of your positioning too. Are you going more after like the everyday person, or a little bit starting with the wine snob per se, and then expanding out to those people, or going after both, or what does that look like?
I'm going after wine drinkers, okay. Which kind of encompasses all of those people. I do know, thankfully, from all my D2C data, that our user, you know, wine is their preferred beverage of choice. They typically shop in the $16 to $21 bottle price point, which is that where we are, the equivalent of. They drink wine 3 times a week on average. We skew slightly female, but not as much as one might expect. And then, of course, our biggest target demo are millennials and Gen Z, which I was really surprised about Gen Z because, you know, I'm 34, and when I was in my early 20s, I was like drinking.
Well, how old is Gen Z now? Gen Z, are they 21?
Yeah, they're like 24, and they're like they're just drink. I feel like they're so much smarter than my generation. I'm like, man, we were just
they're already on wine.
We're filtering vodka. Yeah, they're drinking well. Like, they're thoughtful about what they purchase, and I think that kind of goes back to our marketing story. I remember when we were first launching, I kept getting all this advice that I had to simplify our marketing message in a way that, like, I fundamentally didn't agree with. Like, people are like, you need to just be, you know, premium wine in a can, like, boom, that's what you are. You need to tell everyone that. But like, we're so much more than that. We do artist partnerships on each label. So the art acts as a tasting note that's inside. We have Spotify playlists. Like, I wanted to talk about what the wine was. I wanted to give people like access to recipe pairings and so much more than that. And I think that's really paid off, that I took a hard line on that, because I think that consumers are smarter than ever. I mean, we're constantly being advertised to, right? Like, it's so easy right now to filter through a simple bullshit message.
Yeah, they know. I mean, they'll subscribe to a subscription product just to get the subscription discount, even though they have no intention of being a subscriber. Like, they'll subscribe, get the discount, unsubscribe immediately, and then disappear. And people are like, what, I have a churn problem? It's like, nope, they're just getting a welcome discount. They had no intention to be a subscriber. But yeah, it's so true. They're way smarter. You know, even David Ogilvy was saying that, like, back in the day, like, the consumer isn't an idiot. I think he said it a different way. I'm not going to say it because I don't know if it's like appropriate for like the times, but basically it's like the consumer is not an idiot, and it's so true. So like, what have you guys settled on? What is, I guess, the curated aspect more as a curated canned wine versus, you know, premium wine in a can?
Well, we call ourselves a modern sommelier curated wine company.
Oh,
and
cool.
I like to talk about like all the value props, you know, instead of just focusing on one. I love to talk about that the wine is great, how you are having an expert curating it for you. I do like to say that we like source an ubiquitously pleasing flavor profile, so like literally everyone will like it. I do like to talk about how, and this has come from my customers, they've told me this, that they're drinking Nomadica at home, pouring it into wine glasses and cutting down their consumption. I mean, I myself am guilty of this. Like, how many times have you opened up a bottle of wine intending to drink one glass. And then, you know, 4 hours later, that whole bottle is gone and you kind of have a headache and you're hungover the next day. But sometimes you want a glass of wine and you want a decent glass of wine, and that's fair. And then other times, you know, talking a lot about the sustainability aspect of it. I do really want, like, my intention with this company is to not only give people access to greater wine, but to change the carbon footprint of the wine industry.
Yeah. And I feel that. I mean, I think I've talked about it before on the show, but like, even like these brands are like, yeah, like we're all about like minimizing our you know, carbon footprint. And then it's like, you look at the brand and it's like, you know, the same typical packaging, or worse, like they've got it triple boxed. Every box has a different design on it. And, yeah. You know, they're sending out their direct mail and it's like, I don't know if that really, I don't really know if that's on brand.
100%. And doing all those things, like, oh my God, for us to develop an e-commerce shipper that was recyclable was like just a painful process. Like, it takes so long. You're really limited in like the color scope you can use. But you have to put your money where your mouth is, as far as.
Yeah. I mean, especially like you say, like as the consumer is getting smarter and it's like Gen Z is obviously inching up and up and up. Like, now they actually have a wallet to spend in the marketplace, and they're a little bit, they're not your typical consumer. And like you say, like, they're kind of surprising us all. It's like, turns out they're wine connoisseurs and they're really picky about the type of wine they drink. And, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Can you, you mentioned like you can do Instagram and Facebook, can you do influencer or not quite, or is it the same as like TV where like you're not allowed to drink it, but you can like show it, or what does that look like?
Oh no, we do a lot of influencer marketing. Okay. And that has just been so huge for us. And I'm really like, I run that program alongside, in conjunction with our PR company, because especially right now, as we're growing, like, it's so important who we partner with and to make sure that they're on brand for us and like reflect our values. You know, if I say that we're a sustainable premium brand, but then we partner with an influencer who's like posting every single product and some that I think are like incredibly harmful for the environment and don't align with my brand ethos, like, what type of company are we? And so we are really thoughtful about the types of influencers we partner with. And I really love the wine influencer space. Like, it's really interesting because the wine community itself has definitely reacted with a lot of hatred towards these people.
Towards the influencers?
Yeah. Okay. Who, you know, are not sommeliers, don't come from the industry, are like mostly women drinking wine on their Instagram and talking about it with their following. I think it's really sexist, to be quite honest, and demeaning, especially because the wine industry itself is very male oriented, very white, and definitely of a different age group than these millennial wine influencers. But I have found so much partnership in these influencers. They have been stoked to get behind the brand, like stoked to talk to me, and warm and receptive and kind, especially in the days when we couldn't pay people too, you know, like, yeah, we would just do free product trade. And now I really care about paying people for content. I feel very strongly about that, but
yeah,
it really is. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. And I agree with that too. I think also the consumer, speaking of the consumer, like, I think they like to hear from like average Joes also, like, you know, they're kind of like the lurkers as well. Like, they're like, yeah, listen, like, I don't really know. Like, I like wine. I don't really know what I'm doing, but like, you know, I know some taste better than others to me. And I don't think I need something, you know, it's kind of like car people. Like, there's people who are like really, really, really into cars. And there's people like, you know, I just want a good enough car and like not have to worry about it, but I still want a nice car. Like, two different, very different types of people trying to buy the same product. So that might even be working to your advantage. Like, have you as a company, have you gotten any hate for putting wine in cans or anything like that? Are people like, what was the initial reception to the product? Obviously, some of the people in the restaurants and things were like, oh, like, what is this? But just curious what that was like across the board.
When we first launched, a lot of people on all sides of it, buyers, distributors, because if you're going to sell alcohol in the market, you need a distributor to do so. A lot of people told me it was a bad idea, that I would never be successful and that I should quit. like that, we really haven't gotten any hate in the last 2 years. I think we really like found our vibe, and I got like 40 under 40 wine enthusiasts last year. Like, I do feel like the industry is really coming around and realizing that it's basically time to innovate or die. So, you know, choose a side.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what everybody says at first. And then like a lot of the people who say that really aren't that smart. And like, they think they're so great, but then it's funny. It's like they'll go after an idea that's like half as good and they'll think it's amazing. It's just like, you know, and then you'll get to the point too, where you guys start really killing it. And then people will not like you again. Cause they'll be like, oh, I should have thought of that. Or I passed on that or whatever. Like, you know, you can never win, but as long as you're having fun doing it, that's what's important. So, and it sounds like you are, you got to combine what you love into something even cooler, because now you really get to mold it and do what you want with it versus just like, I mean, I think that's really cool how you integrate the, you know, the different drops you want to do. And it's almost like an extension of you. That's what I find like the most successful brands, like they need some sort of personality or flavor. And like, typically that comes from the person running it. And it's especially true for like some of the more interesting brands out there. Like, I'm not even trying to think of an example. I don't want to say like certain people are interesting, but, no, I think that makes a ton of sense. As we start to wrap up here, like what's your vision for the company? I mean, obviously there's a lot of growth to go from here, but like where do you hope to go over the next year or so?
So it's really funny because what you just said really resonated with me, because I am such an extension of the brand. And I think in terms of the marketing, I was really scared to show that until recently. One of our investors who is like just a genius, she's the head of digital at Chipotle. She did all of those cool, like that. Yeah. So she really, Tressie Lieberman, she pulled me aside and was like, your brand needs to have your voice. Like, speaking to you, you're so interesting. You're so captivating. You have opinions, like be out there. And she really inspired me to change the way that I think about all of our communications. So like, we launched this year, sorry for cursing on your podcast, but we launched the Fuck Dry January campaign. talking about how like,
nice.
It's kind of like yo-yo dieting, like just drink less. Like don't need to embrace a life of restriction, you know, like we're an option to drink less and better. And I think we're really leaning into that hard this year, and we're excited to do that. And that'll be through various partnerships and exploratory experiences. I really want to get cans in hands. And I think the best thing about our brand is we can create these really meaningful real life experiences that then, you know, translate back to online and digital and really create a community of nomads. And so my big plan for this year is just to expand our footprint and have Nomadica be everywhere.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think it makes sense. And I feel like not enough people are doing this either, especially in the space, any space where there's like antiquated old players, like same goes for like CPG. Like if you buy, like, I can't just go to, I forget what company I was looking at, but I was looking at a product. I'm like, wow, I'm shocked I can't buy this D2C. It's like typical, you know, household good product. But you go to their website and they're just like, we make this SKU number 22466. And it's like, awesome. Where do I find it? You have to go to the store locator. And then it's like in every single store imaginable in the United States. But like, I feel like alcohol is even more like that. It's not like you just like go to budlight.com and subscribe. Maybe you can. I feel like if maybe anyone is doing that, it might be them. But I don't know. I think it's really cool to be. I think that's the only way you're going to win these days is being omni-channel as any kind of brand. You really have to be, like you said, everywhere, period. Like wherever people drink wine and however they want to get it.
Yeah. And I think you really do have to be like, not even just in BevAlc, but like across like all CPG, you have to be fearless right now. I feel like I see so many brands just doing the same thing, funneling all of their money into paid, not getting a great return on it, you know? And it's like, do something different. I'm really fascinated with the concept of like, when you imagine you're playing or you have fun with things, like it unlocks all of these layers of creativity. When you're not constrained by fear, you can really think clearly. And so I've just been obsessed with that. And our marketing team is kind of on that path with me right now. And we're excited to have some fun with the brand.
Yeah. I feel like the Coinbase Super Bowl ad got a ton of hate. I don't even know why. Everyone's like, oh, that ad sucked. And I'm like, I feel like everybody's just like salty because like they're not connected with like they don't have the imagination they used to have. So they're finding reasons to pull it apart. I don't know. There's like, totally. I think there's a lot going on post apparently, like the agency is fighting Coinbase. Like everyone's trying to take credit for it. I'm just like, listen, I run an agency, like agency, just give the brand credit. They're the client. Like, just, you know, whatever, put it in the deck. That's it. But no, I think it's so true. Like, it's funny because like, we'd rather do something that's less effective because we think it'll work because like other people have done it versus like actually trying something that's new and fresh, which will actually have even better results than everyone else. But it is scary because you do get stuck in that trap. And I do think you win doing the opposite. I think creativity in marketing is super rare these days. I mean, I think it always has been, but like now that there's so much quantity of product, the only way to stand out is going to be marketing creativity. But most people do lack that. And you definitely can't copy the big brands like Bud Light's ad spend. I mean, you're not even going to come close to that.
No, I could never touch that. Like, you know, even in our best year, like could not touch, I can't compete. So it's like, where can we win? Where can we be creative? And I think the fact that I don't have a traditional marketing background has really come in handy here. I mean, same thing with our branding, you know, our branding is so unique. People are so drawn to it. And it's like, our creative director just did it. We didn't ask people mm-hmm. their opinions. We didn't get caught up in A/B testing. We didn't like look at what other brands have done. We just did what we thought was best. And it's really worked out for us.
Yeah, it's great. It's like super premium. It's like almost like editorial feel in a way, which is like, mm-hmm. just gives it that like, I don't know. It feels like researched a little bit. Yeah. It feels curated, yeah. You know, which is like hard to do. Yeah. And if you looked like every other D2C wine company, you're not, I mean, what's the point? It's a sea of sameness. And then everybody wonders why. I mentioned on the podcast, D2C brand C, D2C brand do, everybody's just copying each other. And then now that Facebook's not doing as well as it used to, everyone's like, oh no, like, why are things not doing well? It's like, nobody really differentiated. But yeah, it's been awesome to chop it up today. If people want to learn more about Nomadica, maybe pick up a case, where can they go to learn more?
ExploreNomadica.com. Awesome. Even if you subscribe once and cancel it, I won't be mad at you.
get the subscription discount. Just kidding. Don't say stay
just kidding,
subscribed.
Don't do that.
Definitely don't abandon a cart and wait for a discount email either.
Definitely don't do that.
Okay, they definitely don't do that. Although we all abandon our carts now that we know what we're doing. Okay, cool. So yeah, it's been great having you on, talking about how you forked revenue in the last year, launched D2C, grew it to 50% of revenue. Outside of learning about Nomadica, anywhere else we can go to learn more about you and the company, or anything else you want to promote?
I mean, yeah, follow me on Instagram if you want to see what I'm drinking. I post a lot. I'm still a wine director in Los Angeles at this restaurant called Gigi's, which is one of the hardest reservations to get in the city right now. create an incredible list of French and a little bit of Italian, a little bit of Californian wines on there. And my feed is like constantly just great wine.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds good. We'll link that up down in the show notes below. Check it out, everybody. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Kristen.
Thanks so much. I had such a good time. Great chatting.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. If you're not subscribed on iTunes or Spotify, go hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're not on our email list, go sign up at wavebreak.co/join. You'll join other e-commerce leaders at brands like Skims, Cartier, and Walmart, and thousands more, learning exactly what's working in e-commerce right now. You won't want to miss it. Sign up at wavebreak.co/join. It's free. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day.